Happy Friday to you. It's Friday's edition of Agino Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein here with you, and today lots of guests. We've got Sarah McNeil Grove, president of the Agino Community Band. Also going to be talking to Sarah Bird, who will be highlighting a summer solstice boat party. Food Truck Fridays, Mark Wheeler is going to tell us all about it. Also going to hear from Christina De La Rosa. There'll be a preview of the Longest Day concert at Marine Park with her. And then we'll learn about this weekend's hula workshop with visiting Kumu Hulu, Kilo Hana Silv. That's all coming up. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, more. It's all happening in just a minute, right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An Arizona congressman has introduced a bill to stop a proposed copper mine in the Tonto National Forest about 60 miles east of Phoenix. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, Representative Raul Grijalva wants to reverse the federal land swap that paved the way for the mine.
Grijalva says his bipartisan Save Oak Flat Act would protect the area from development of what would be the largest copper mine in North America. It's considered sacred ancestral land by many clans of the San Carlos Apache tribe. Protesters have been camped out at the site for nearly 5 months. The land swap was part of the 2015 National Defense Authorization Act. It allowed for the Rio Tinto Company to swap several other parcels of land with the federal government in exchange for the Oak Flat area. Mine supporters like Senator John McCain say the project will bring billions of dollars and thousands of jobs to the state over 60 years, the mine's expected lifespan. He also says it'll give an economic boost to the San Carlos Apache Reservation, where unemployment hovers around 70%. Grijalva's bill asserts that the mine will result in the physical destruction of tribal sacred areas and deprive Native Americans of practicing their religion. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heiches in Flagstaff.
New community artwork in Spokane, Washington will commemorate the slaughter of horses by the U.S. Army to subdue Native Americans in the 1850s. Steve Jackson has more.
In September of 1858, approximately 900 horses belonging to the Spokane, Coeur d'Alene, and Palouse tribes of the area were slaughtered by the soldiers of U.S. Army Colonel George Wright along the banks of the Spokane River. That violent act was meant to prevent the Native American efforts to stop the influx of settlers. Now a public art project sponsored by Spokane Arts will commemorate that historical moment. Artist Ryan Federson, a Colville Confederated tribal member, will facilitate the artwork. Federson says there's already a monument in Spokane to commemorate the event, but this work will be more to honor the horses.
We look at war and conflict, and we have these kind of set established rules, and we are able to see ourselves outside of that. But when something happens that kind of breaks those rules of conduct, we're able to see the violence on a more personal level, and I think the horses are an access point to that.
The artwork will be unique in that it will involve community participation. Federson says she's prepared a number of stencils to make a total of 900 horses.
And so myself and some assistants and volunteers will be kind of laying out blanks using these stencils, and then the public will be invited to illustrate a specific horse, to give their care and attention and to recognize each one of the individual lives that was taken.
Federson says they'll provide the art materials and people can show up to participate. The horses will be colored with chalk and the artwork will be temporary depending on when the rains come. The event will run June the 20th to the 28th at the Tribal Gathering Plaza adjacent to Spokane City Hall. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
In Minnesota, the Freedom Schools program is now open to help curb summer learning loss and address closing the achievement gap for Native American students in the Twin Cities. Program Director Nation Wright says Native students often face a much tougher road to success.
Although graduation rates have been steadily increasing the last few years, they're still much lower than those of white students and even other minority groups. And so a program like this can provide a well-balanced, enriching curriculum.
The 6-week summer enrichment curriculum includes Native American authors and a focus on language and culture. About 60 children are enrolled. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at UTTC.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Seven composers in residence, seven world premieres, a 33-member wind ensemble, and two totally different concerts this weekend at Thunder Mountain High School. The Taku Winds, Maslanka, and Alaskan Composers Festival wraps up this weekend. Saturday, 8 p.m., full wind ensemble featuring Katie Giorgio on trombone. Sunday, 3 p.m., an afternoon of contemporary chamber music. Tickets available at the Jack, the bookstores, and at JunoCommunityBand.org. This message brought to you by Opera2Go.
Well, and speaking of that, we're back in the KTO News Studios. I'm Andy Klein, and Sarah McNeil Grove is with me, the president of Juno Community Band, and you're here to talk about that exact thing that we were just hearing that that public service announcement about.
Oh, we are. We have such an exciting weekend coming up ahead of us. Taku Winds, which is a wind ensemble, and I think as you just heard, is a 33-piece group of wind and brass and percussion players that are having a really, really exciting concert. The main feature is a trombone concerto played by Juno's Katie Giorgio, and it's written by Dr. David Maslanka. And when he heard that we were going to be playing it in Juno, he said, "Can I come up and work with you?" And so we said, "Wow, of course."
Absolutely,
we'd love to have
yes.
you come up. So we've been working with him since Wednesday. We've had several wonderful, really intense, and we're just bringing that concerto into such wonderful, it's going to be gorgeous. Katie's doing just such a wonderful job. How many times do you hear a trombone solo?
I mean, I can't think of a time, right? And,
yeah.
and so often you think of it as almost like this backup, the sort of like the backbeat section of the band that provides this backing. But when you have someone who's really talented as a player and then a composer who's specifically composing for that instrument, it must be really exciting.
Oh, it is. It's just very exciting. I can't describe it. You just have to come and listen. And this piece also has very prominent solo parts for several other instruments. There's a cello. You don't, again, usually hear strings in with a wind group, and a piano, and some very good percussion parts. Big timpani solo, a big marimba solo, and Katie invited
a timpani solo. I want to just
yes.
Oh, that's
there
exciting.
Are five timpanis here, and Dwayne Corbin, who just conducted the Juno Pop Symphony, stayed because when he heard this piece was going to be on this program, he said, "Can I play?" And we said, "We'd love to have you." So he's back there wildly hitting on these drums. It's wonderful to listen to and wonderful to see. So anyway, Katie invited several of her musician friends. Rhonda Ryder plays cello, and she is on the faculty of the Boston Conservatory. Another friend who is playing the piano for this is Carl Paulnick, and he is the dean of the Music College of Music at the college. And the player who is the Conservatory, Brian Calhoun. So we've got just a star-studded
wow.
Group of players here with us, and it's very, very exciting. And don't want to miss it.
Then a 33-piece would really have a very unique sound.
It does. A wind ensemble is, hopefully as it suggests, is a group of wind players, woodwinds, clarinets, flutes, oboes, and brass, trumpets, trombones, tubas. We've got bassoons. We've got a contrabass clarinet in it. And for this concert, one of the things that I find very exciting is we have sort of unusual instruments in this wind ensemble. The harp player, Candice Lavolsi, who plays in the Juno Symphony, said, "Can I stay and play?" So several of the pieces have written parts for harp, because you never see a harp in a wind ensemble. We've got a couple of other string pieces. A string quartet is part of one of the pieces. So it's just really, really exciting.
Right. Well, very cool. So give us a little bit more about the details of what's happening. So today there's something happening actually right now in just about an hour at 4 o'clock, 4 to 6 at the at Egan Hall at UAS.
Right. The three guest players, the celloist, the marimba player, and the piano player, are going to be talking about what it's like to be a professional musician. And so it's going to be a discussion
a
of
fun thing,
from Carnegie Hall to the Grand Canyon and the shores of Lynn Canal. So if you've ever wanted to know what a professional musician does in their life, here's a chance to come and talk with them. I think it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we all have fantasies, and I'm sure people who are musicians, of course, I mean, that can be an ultimate goal for a lot of people who play music and are serious about it. But what is that like? It is an interesting thing to think about. I'm sure that a lot of it is stressful. Right, you're never necessarily sure of the next job and that sort of thing, right? But on the other hand, it's probably one of the most sort of pinnacle creative experiences to be
so
a professional musician.
I think it will be really fun to hear their perspective on the kind of life that they lead. That's this afternoon, 4 to 6, Egan Lecture Hall. It's free and open to the public. So, you know, if you aren't doing anything in the next couple of hours, come on out and join us.
Then on Saturday and Sunday, there's things happening on both days,
Saturday and Sunday, we have concerts, and they are different concerts. So if you come to Saturday, you also need to come to Sunday because they are not the same. Saturday is the big 33-piece group that is featuring the trombone concerto. The other pieces that round out that program were written specifically for us and for this concert by four Alaskan composers, three of them from Juneau, William Todd Hunt, Artemio Sandoval, and Tyree Peeney, and then Emerson Eads from Fairbanks. So these are new Alaska pieces that we are going to be premiering, world premieres this weekend.
That's so exciting. I mean, so often people think of classical music as this music that's 300 years old or 200 years old or something, and you know, you've heard it before, and these are just, but to hear brand new music being composed today, especially by Alaskan artists,
it is.
Cool.
That's been, you know, very exciting. When we started putting this together, we thought, what would complement the trombone concerto? And we thought, well, why not have just all new contemporary composers?
Wow. So that's happening Saturday at 8 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School.
Right. And it is $20, and tickets can be purchased at the Jack and at the bookstores and normal outlets.
And then Sunday at 3 p.m.
Sunday at 3 p.m. is a chamber music concert. It will also feature four of Dr. Maslenka's works for smaller groups. We have a marimba solo played by Brian Calhoun, one of our guest artists. Dwayne Corbin and William Todd Hunt are going to be playing a marimba saxophone duet composed by Dr. Maslenka. We have Ron DeRuyter, our cello guest, is going to be playing a cello solo. We have a flute quartet. We have a clarinet, flute, harp trio. I mean, just a wide variety of music. You'll find something that you like in this concert.
Well, this is all happening this weekend. Starts today, a really fun, interesting lecture that's happening at UAS Egan Lecture Hall from 4 to 6, a discussion about what it's like to be a professional musician from Carnegie Hall to the Grand Canyon to the shores of Lynn Canal. I love that title. And then the concert on Saturday starts at 8 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School. That's the trombone concerto and with the 33-piece wind ensemble. And then the Sunday show is at Thunder Mountain High School again at 3 p.m., and that's chamber music.
Correct. And can I just add one thing? Before each of those concerts on Saturday and Sunday, we are having a discussion with the composer so you can learn a little bit about the pieces, how they were written, why they were written. So 7 o'clock for the pre-concert on Saturday and 2 o'clock for the pre-concert discussion on Sunday.
Sarah, you're staying busy this time of year.
I am.
I'll tell
you. It's been great.
Sarah McNair Grove from the Juneau Community Bands. Thanks so much for coming in, and have a great weekend of wonderful music.
Thank you for having us.
No problem.
Hope to see you.
Okay. Thank you. welcome back to a Juno Afternoon, and we're going to talk next about a fun-sounding event, a summer solstice party on a boat! Sarah Bird's here. Sarah, welcome to the show, and tell us, you were just telling me a little bit about the inspiration behind this party.
Yeah, well, my inspiration was actually last year, so I'm a summer seasonal worker here in Juno, and last year I just thought, well, we're like these communities out here with the ocean, but we don't really utilize that. The tourists utilize that, but we don't. So I was thinking, well, let's try to do some charter parties.
Very cool. Let's get on a boat and have a party. Yeah. Right. I love it.
So tomorrow is the 20th, and that's summer solstice. So we thought, I work with the Vikings, so we're going to start there at 7 o'clock. So if you don't have a ticket already, we don't have that many. We do have a few left, but I would try to get there right on time. We're going to have your first drink there, and then the Juno Tours bus is going to come pick us up.
Oh, that's awesome, a party bus.
Mm-hmm.
I love the sound of a party bus.
Well, it's
there
like,
you go.
It's all about having a good time and being safe.
Safe,
yeah,
exactly.
So they'll pick us up, and we're going to go out to the boat, and we're going to get on. There's going to be the pole fitness ladies there, dressed up in some really cute little sailor white costumes, and they're going to be go-going, dancing.
Go-go dancing on a boat. I love it. This is getting better and better.
Uh-huh. It's electronic music with Manuel, and he's amazing. He's all over town, so he knows kind of what Juno is all about already. So we're going to go out and then anchor somewhere, because it's better if you're anchored, because the rocking and things like that. And there'll be appetizers, and I'll also do another toast that will be provided, but then they'll with part of your purchase.
Yeah.
It's important you have to say these things correctly.
Sure, sure.
And then after that, there's a cash bar after that the Viking is providing, so that's awesome. And, we're just going to dance and have fun.
And so is it a white party, too?
Mm-hmm.
So you're encouraged to wear white. And this is, a yacht party kind of thing. You know, it's an all-white deal. Right.
Nautical. If you don't have, I know it's kind
nautical
of
nautical theme, too.
Yeah,
I like that
so
idea, too.
It's either of those, because I just want something that would be good for men and women, because it's kind of hard to get everyone into costume. Girls love dressing up. But.
Yeah, right. It's the guys you have to worry about. Absolutely, right.
Uh-huh.
So I like it, like the P. Diddy all-white party. Very good. Very cool. And then tickets are $100.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for the entire thing, plus the starter cocktail and then the toast.
And then when we come back, we're going to have our last drink at the Viking. And then we'll be at the Viking all night in the back alley. It's decorated in white. So if you can't come to the boat party because it's too early or whatever, come dressed in white or nautical theme, and we'll be in the back alley all night having fun. So I want everyone to come. So it's not just whoever.
It's a great way to celebrate the longest day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, it's the summer solstice boat party. It all starts at 7 o'clock on the 20th, tomorrow night, at the Viking. And very cool, the shuttle to and from the boat. And then you go out, party, anchored up, toast, come on back, and shuttle back to the Viking, and then get down all night long in the back room. Sounds great.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun.
Thanks so much, Sarah, for coming in. Really appreciate it. Any place that people should go if they want to find out more about information here?
Facebook is the best way. It's just the Summer Solstice White Boat Party.
Very good.
You can find out on the Vikings page or whatever. That's a big one. But Facebook is a great way to hit.
Yeah.
And you can buy tickets online also, and they're discounted right now for $75. So if you want to get onto that before and not have to pay the $100 at the door,
you can always do that. Wow, well, I think that would be a smart play. All right. It's the Summer Solstice Boat Party happening at 7 o'clock tomorrow. Sarah, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Tell us all about it. All right.
Your touch has thrilled me like the rush of the wind, and your arms have held me safe from a rolling sea. There's always been a quiet place to harbor you and me.
Our love is like a ship on the ocean, we've been sailing with a cargo full of love and devotion.
the boat, baby.
Rock the boat.
Don't tip the boat over.
Rock the boat.
Don't rock the boat, baby.
Rock the boat.
And I've always had your tender lips to keep me warm.
Oh, rocking the boat. All right. Well, welcome back to the studio here at KTOO and to Juno Afternoon. Today's forecast, by the way, mostly cloudy for the rest of today. Light winds and decreasing clouds for tonight, and lows around just 50 degrees. So it sounds like some good weather coming in with partly cloudy skies expected for tomorrow. And in the studio with me now is Christina Della Rosa, and she is helping to put together the Longest Day concert for Alzheimer's that's going to be happening at the Jack. So welcome, Christina. Good to have you in here.
Thanks. I guess I'll have to fight it out with your previous guest about which day is actually solstice.
Oh, well,
I guess I'll have to Google it. I thought it was on Sunday.
It sort of switches around every year, right? You know, I grew up always thinking the 21st was always the solstice, and the winter solstice was always on the 21st. But I have noticed that it's, you know, there's a specific time of day. But anyway, so.
But anyway, we've got about 19 hours of light on Sunday, the maximum amount of light, and I believe that's about 3 more hours than you'd have down south.
That's amazing, isn't it? And so what a great day to have a great concert. So tell me a little bit about the lineup of the concert. What's going to be happening at this event?
Well, it's an event that's organized by the National Alzheimer's Association. It's a fundraiser, and usually they have people can kind of do whatever they want, and they usually have people do things for 16 hours, but that's a lot. So I decided to have a six-hour event, and so what we've got lined up is it goes from 1 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m., and you can just come in and out as you want. And starting at 1, we have Tom Loker on his piano keyboard, and he'll also be back again at 3. And then at 2 o'clock, we'll have Daughters of the New Moon. We'll do some belly dancing. Don't stand in the front row, otherwise who knows what might happen.
That's right.
And then from 4 to 6, Fleet Street is graciously performing for us. And then at 6 o'clock, we'll finish up with a cabaret sing-along piano thing with Jackie Farnsworth.
Oh, great. What a great, cool variety of music and entertainment and stuff happening through the day, right? So depending on what hour you get there, you have a completely different concert happening.
Yeah, it's just very informal.
Yeah, very nice. And so tell me a little bit more about the idea behind this fundraiser and how it got together with the Alzheimer's Association.
Well, it's their national event. They do a lot of fundraising, and they picked the solstice because the idea is that if you're living with Alzheimer's or looking after someone with Alzheimer's, it's kind of a long day.
Mm.
And there is a book actually written called The 36-Hour Day. But they just picked the day, and I was on their email list because my mother has Alzheimer's, so I thought, well, I can do that. Why not? I've gone to enough events. I'll give it a whirl.
Well, that's cool to pick that up, yeah.
All the musicians are donating their time, so all the profits will go to the Alzheimer's Association. But in addition to money, we're just also interested in just doing education and awareness. I have lots and lots of free handouts about Alzheimer's and caregiving and medications and all kinds of things, and then we'll have some education tables. From 1 to 3, the Southeast Community Services will be there talking about some of the services in Juneau.
And speaking of that, you were saying just a little bit ago that you have sort of like the top 10 or a list of different things that are sort of warning signs,
yeah,
and things like that.
If I read you this list, you're all going to be paranoid.
Right.
But basically, Alzheimer's is a disease, and dementia is a symptom. I hope I got that the right way around. Anyway, some of the warning signs are memory loss, that not just like losing your phone, which we all do, but things that actually disrupt your normal life, like forgetting to turn the stove off, forgetting about taking medications, forgetting appointments, forgetting how to get from A to B. So things that disrupt your life. Changes, having difficulty planning or solving problems, difficulty completing familiar tasks, perhaps at work or if you're already retired, just things normally you do. Think about when you get up in the morning, how many steps it takes just to get ready for your day.
Mm-hmm.
Confusion about what time it is or where you are. Trouble understanding visual images or spatial relationships, not really understanding exactly what objects are for or where they are kind of in space. Maybe problems with your writing or your speaking or with words. That could be a problem you have. Misplacing things and unable to retrace your steps to find things, because we all lose things, but usually we all find them eventually. I remember once my mom left her car keys in her sewing kit, for example.
Hmm.
Poor judgment. Of course, it depends on what your judgment was to start with, but poor judgment than you normally have. And money is one of the first things that people can have problems with. Withdrawal socially or from your work activities. And then, of course, changes in your mood and personality. But, of course, all these symptoms, you wouldn't have to have all of them to have Alzheimer's or dementia, but and they could be caused by other things. So those are just things to look out for.
And if people sort of, what's the advice to people who feel like, boy, one or two of these things have happened and it's a little out of character for me, what's a good step to take?
Well, you could talk to your general practitioner doctor. In Juneau, we only have one neurologist, unfortunately, and we don't really have gerontologists. Elder specialists too much, kind of a shortage of those. But you could talk to your general doctor. Thinking about for your, and you can easily read up on it yourself if you have any concerns about yourself. Or maybe you won't be the person who really notices. Maybe it'd be a loved one who notices it. Or maybe you're a high-functioning person, so you just sort of cover up for things.
Mm-hmm.
Like the lady in the movie Still Alice, which is fictional, she was very intelligent. And so she could kind of cover up a lot of her mistakes for a long time.
And that seems like that's a typical thing. I mean, people feel a certain amount of embarrassment or feel a certain, you know, they don't want to reveal that they're having these symptoms.
Right, because if you say, I have cancer, people are going to say, oh, dear, how awful, you know, and it's a different reaction than often people get with Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's people tend to think, ooh.
It's scary.
We don't want to think about that as being part of the fact that's going to be a part of our future with our, if not for ourselves, which individually it's not, you'll probably be all right, but it's going to be a part mm-hmm. of the future of someone you love or someone, your friends. And it has a stigma, sort of like mental illness,
mm-hmm.
but gradually that's becoming less so as they were getting more attention paid to it and some celebrity spokespeople.
Yeah. Well, so learning more information is a big part of it. Also just going and having a good time, listening to great music, and it's a free event. Donations are, of course, welcome, and it's a fundraiser for the Alzheimer's Association. All starts on Sunday at 1 p.m., goes to 7 p.m., June 21st at the Jack. It's the longest day concert for Alzheimer's.
Okay, and don't forget to wear your purple. The best prize, best costume wins a prize. You can get your nails painted purple. And if you have any used iPods that are working, bring them and we'll donate them to people in nursing homes.
Well, that's great.
And the one other thing I wanted to mention is I still need a couple of volunteers, so and I'm on the Facebook event called The Longest Day Concert for Alzheimer's.
So just put in there if you can volunteer and let Christina know.
Sounds good.
Thanks so much for coming
in.
The Longest Day Concert for Alzheimer's happening Sunday starting at 1 p.m. Coming up now, Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. A house wren sings from deep inside a thicket. With its tail cocked at a jaunty angle, this small brown wren presents us with a classic bird image. That cocked tail, twitching sharply as the house wren scolds, puts an exclamation point on the wren's perky voice and attitude. But wait, there's another bird in that thicket. Another small brown bird firing off a brisk song, its tail up and twitching. Another wren, of course? Not so fast. This song and tail belong to a Lincoln's sparrow. The Lincoln's sparrow also frequently cocks and twitches its tail. Some other sparrows, ones that spend much of their time in dense vegetation, do the same. But it's the wrens that we will always know best for that sporty tail. In fact, the very word wren comes to us intact from Old Norse and Anglo-Saxon languages. It referred specifically to the tiny cocked tail of the only wren of the Old World, once known simply as the wren, now called the Eurasian wren. It's a close cousin of the winter wren and the Pacific wren of the U.S. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. That's some slack guitar from Hawaii. And Juno is hosting two hula performances and a Saturday workshop this weekend. Visiting Kumuhulu Kilohana Silve and Tina Kobayashi stopped by KTO's studios today and spoke with Jeff Brown about hula and this weekend's activities.
Perhaps a good way to start off the interview is to have you do a welcome chant.
I would love to. This is an Oli Aloha. Oh, now naita halamitale huae, halelehua noia nata noe. Oh, ta noia ea no ine li ane, ho io ta itimai. Oh, itimai no oko, ititu no me te aloha, aloha e. Aloha, aloha.
Ilana, thank you very much for putting us in the mood with the interview today.
My pleasure.
So first, let's start out with, what is hula?
That is a wonderful question for a kumuhula. Hula is an art expression. It is also a connection to nature. In ancient Hawaii, people do not realize that the men were the first hula dancers. Hula was very much related to martial arts, a Hawaiian martial art form called lua. And the rigorous movement of the hula was fabulous training. The kind of hula that we associate with pageants and shows and luau danced by women came much, much later.
And did women take it over?
Well, that developed towards the 19th century. Women always danced, but the important ancient sacred dances were done by the men. These were dances that were actually done in the temple. And people don't realize that in the ancient form of hula, the voice is very important, which is why I was delighted to start our interview together with an oli or chant, because there's a lot of chanting and voice work done in the ancient dances.
How many varieties of hula are there?
There are many different kinds of expression. You have implement dances where you have feathered gourds or even small polished rocks that make a percussive sound. You dance with wooden sticks, with gourds, with drums. Many of those are sitting dances. There's ancient dances and modern dances. Dances for every occasion you could imagine.
You grew up in Hawaii, but then you moved to Paris at some point.
That's right. I grew up in Hawaii, in Manoa Valley, and went to Paris, France, as an art history student. And there, I fell in love with a handsome Frenchman. And that changed the course of my life. Instead of returning to my islands, I remained in Paris, France, and raised my only daughter, Vanessa Leilani Teal, in the City of Light.
Is she a hula practicer?
Of course, and she is the reason I became a kumuhula. Although I had been raised with hula and knew a lot about the culture, it was never my intention to teach hula. I was an art historian. I loved doing art criticism, organizing exhibitions, and teaching art history for the American University and other institutions in Paris. So hula was something I loved, but I had never thought of it as a profession. And it was when my daughter reached the age of 12 and begged me to teach her hula that I began very slowly with a small group, thinking they'll learn 3 or 4 ancient dances, a few modern dances, a chant, lots of history, how to make some Hawaiian food, and then we'll have a party. Well, that was over 20 years ago, and our halau, or school of hula, is still going strong.
Is it difficult to learn?
If you really want to learn, the culture and the traditions, yes, it takes years, because you also have to understand the language and you have to understand what you're dancing, which means really understanding the Polynesian psychology, the Polynesian vision of the world, which is quite different. It's an animist view.
Has the practice of hula changed over the years? Or the individual dances changed from a classic style to a more modern technique?
There have been a lot of changes in the hula world in recent years, especially because of the hula competitions, like the Merry Monarch Festival, where there's a tremendous pressure on each school to come up with something new and innovative. So even when presenting traditional classical dances, there's a pressure to think of some new little thing you can bring to your interpretation of the dance to make it stand out and look different. So yes, this has changed the interpretation of hula, especially in the modern dances.
Would you say that's a good thing, or is it something that you kind of avoid?
I think it's an interesting and positive thing in that hula has become a world-class art with a capital A. And here's the proof. We're dancing hula in Juneau and all over the world, in Paris, where my halau is based, as well as Rome, Italy, where we have an annex. We also have a school in Beijing. And there are many, many schools of hula in Japan and Mexico.
Are men still avoiding doing the hula?
No, there are more and more male dancers. In Paris, we have a number of male dancers. In Italy as well. It's a very exciting form of exercise for men because there's the intellectual stimulation, the history, and the link to martial arts.
And you're in town to do some performances this evening at the Jack, and also tomorrow morning and afternoon at the Jack.
That's right. Tina's going to tell you all about it.
Yes, tonight at the Jack at 5:30, we'll do a hula presentation. And then tomorrow at the downtown JRC, there will be a workshop that is open to the public from 1:30 to 4:30. That it will be $35 for JRC members, $50 for non-members, and it will be a really fun and interesting and pretty intensive hula teaching all about the hula. And then tomorrow night, we will have a performance and dessert and wine at the Downtown Heritage, and that is from 7:30 to 9:30.
And those that participate in the workshop will be encouraged to be a part of that presentation in public. And so we're looking for a total Hawaiian cultural experience during the time of this workshop. It will be very intense, very fun. You'll meet a lot of great hula dancers who live right here in Juneau, and eight of our hula sisters who've come all the way from Hawaii.
What does hula represent to you?
Hula is a way of life. It's more than just going into a dance studio and teaching a routine. It's something you actually live. When you go out and pick your ferns to make your head lay for an ancient sacred dance, you're asking permission through chant before picking the ferns. There is a hula goddess. Laka is the goddess of hula. She is also goddess of the forest and watches over all the things that grow. So there's a fusion between nature and dance.
Tina, can you please repeat the times and the days of the workshop and the performances?
Yes. Tonight at the Jack, we'll start at 5:30. Tomorrow at the Juno Racquet Club from 1:30 to 4:30 will be the public workshop. And then our performance will be tomorrow night from 7:30 to 9:30 at the Downtown Heritage. And that's $25 per person for the performance at the Heritage.
Kalana, anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Just, I hope that some of your listeners out there will be free and able to join us and experience a little bit of authentic Hawaiian culture this weekend in Juneau. Mahalo.
Keep on.
keep on trucking. That's what we're going to do. Mark Wheeler's in here to talk about Food Truck Friday.
You got it. Right across the street.
And it's really cool. You've got, of course, you own Copa and a wonderful ice cream shop, and you've got this really cool new, that thing's so awesome, that new cart. So you've, I've seen like every available, every time it's in, you're like, I got to bust that thing out. I'm going to use it, right?
Yeah, why not? We have it parked down on South Franklin most of the time for our lovely visitors coming to town and our downtown residents, but we like to do special events, and every Friday we'll be here at Food Truck Fridays. Serving up Alaskan-themed ice cream and sherbet and sorbet.
Very cool. And tell me a little bit more about other people who are there a lot. I know the Happy Camper is a kind of new fun one. That's,
Amanda is cooking up some fresh, savory, tasty little
rice bowls. Yeah,
beans. And she got three varieties, I think. And
yeah, you'll eat tasty. This food and be healthier after you've eaten it.
Yeah,
which
then you eat ice cream
with food
afterwards,
all the time.
Right?
Ice cream, you know.
It's a yin-yang thing.
It's a treat.
Yeah. And there's Parker Wilson's doing great burgers and fries and other specialties.
Yep.
And I think tonight we're going to have cotton candy. I can't remember what else. There's a couple artists that usually sell things at the Food Truck Fridays. And then we have music. And I don't know what the music lineup is.
It's always great, though. You know, and it's such a fun thing. Like food trucks in general have been this kind of growing thing that's been happening more and more throughout. You know, like I know Portland, for instance, is really well known for having this row of food trucks.
Man.
I've never been there for that. Is it amazing?
Well, there's several kind of fields of them.
Yeah.
Just
incredible.
Stuff.
Yeah, right. Just amazing.
There's this one place that did fried pies at like 2 a.m. so good. And like Belgian French fries. Oh, yeah.
But our food trucks got mentioned in none other than the New York Times.
NYT, that's right.
Recently,
yeah,
which
they forgot
really
to mention
cool.
us, but it was great. They covered the Juno food tours and what Midgey's doing, bringing visitors around to different places. And the Parker Wilson's had a picture there in the New
Very
York
cool,
Times.
Very cool, yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, and it's just sort of another example of how cool the Jack has been as this community resource place that gets people together and all these different...
Word up to Nancy DeCherry, How about a shout out to Nancy DeCherry?
It's the truth, and it's like, you know, when that... Who would have thought all of these different things would have happened when that building was acquired, right? And then, what we'll do one day is Food Truck Friday. It's like, what?
She was doing a farmer's market. Like 5 years. That's how we actually got started making this rhubarb sherbet, because she had to do farmers. We don't have farms, right? But, you know, there was a little farmer's market, and people were bringing in the produce, and we had the sherbet, and things grew out of that.
Yeah.
Now we had the Food Truck Fridays, and I think it's a great combination, because you can go down and hear some great music, maybe some dancing, and then you come out and have some food, and it's kind of a family-friendly event. Even some visitors are coming down. Like, we got like a really good review from this couple who wanted to see what the locals were doing. So they came to Food Truck Fridays, and they were sampling all the different dishes there, and it's a really cool thing.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about your business. Tell me while you're here, like, you know, everyone I know kind of knows about it, but it just started. It seems like it's going gangbusters. It's become this really cool hangout for people, and
We're kind of a neighborhood.
New business owner, what have been some of the? What do you think of some of the biggest like challenges have been?
If they ask me that, I get that question. Here's the thing: getting stuff to Juno.
Yes,
getting stuff to Juno is like you never know. Like you go buy stuff in Fred Meyer's, you don't think or whatever, like how hard it was to get that thing here. But you know, I have to buy things, and I buy them from vendors in Seattle usually, and you got to tack on 25%. Basically, to that price for what we have to pay to bring the stuff here. So that's why stuff costs more. And I never realized that. But it's hard to source good stuff.
Right.
But I think now in Juneau, there's people that have figured it out, how to source good stuff and are cooking good stuff. And it's kind of this renaissance, you know?
Yeah.
And what we do is, I think what other restaurants are doing too, is really focusing on the local. So we have rhubarb sherbet, which is kind of our signature flavor. But we're making spruce dip ice cream.
I had
Which
some of that.
A big hit.
That was good.
Tastes like Christmas, right?
It really absolutely smells and tastes like Christmas. It's like the winter ale, you know, that we make at Alaskan Brewing, and it's the same kind of that flavor and that aroma you just don't get anywhere else.
And Marcy hooked us up. I was like, where can I get spruce tips? She told me about the people in Gustavus, and we bought 95 pounds of spruce tips, and you guys buy 3,000.
Yeah,
so
we're
just a drop in the bucket. But, you know, one thing we did this year, we made Devil's Club ice cream with the Devil's Club buds, and it was hugely popular. I had no idea. And so we want to find a source for that next year to go a little bit bigger. I made a smoked alder ice cream today with birch syrup sponge candy inside, birch syrup from Talkeetna. you know, we've been playing around with liquors from Port Chilgoot Distillery.
Oh, yeah.
We love to mess around with Alaska Brewing Beer,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
So you're just trying to find what we can do with local ingredients. And ice cream is so flexible. You can do so much creative stuff. It's really fun.
What's been the nicest surprise of owning the business that you were kind of not necessarily anticipating?
Well, we just had the best customers, you know. Like, just amazing people.
It's become this very cool community little center of people that get together and cool things happen.
One of our regulars, she made me a hat that says Gopa on it. Like, she knitted this hat. And
awesome.
People bring us their rhubarb. And, you know, we give them store credit. But people bring us currants and salmon berries. And, you know, they just kind of want to be part of it. And it's like we're just part of the neighborhood, part of the community. And people get a good feeling from that. And, you know, sometimes people bring us their favorite recipes and we'll make it, you know, and it's just fun. You know, it's just fun to be part of and fun to see. I guess one of my favorite things is you see these little chance encounters happen. Like, you see two people online and they haven't seen each other in, you know, a few weeks, and they just have this great conversation. They weren't meaning to see each other, but
right. Then
just something sparks. And we're just providing that little space for people to have these encounters or their meetings or their birthday celebration or, you know, whatever.
I was surprised when I went there. I went there for the opening, and then I went there like a few weeks later, and a few weeks later, I was surprised how much you guys are getting into the coffee. Like, that seems like such a cool focus of what's happening there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and, you know, we're a coffee shop that does ice cream, and we do food, too, at lunch, and it's a neat balance because we'll get people in the morning or a lot of grown-ups getting their coffee, and then in the afternoon we get the kids.
Yeah,
and that
right.
makes it fun.
Right, right.
We have a lot of customers that work in the two nearby buildings, the federal building and the state office building, but we're also just part of the neighborhood. So a lot of neighborhood kids will come over with their parents, and kids from after school at Harborview or the high school, and it just has a real neat kind of mix of age. We have retired folks who live in Park Shore come over, you know, so it's real kind of a...
Is that part of your mission? Did you have a mission... Sort of
ambitious statement. Yeah,
but part of it to not just make gourmet great ice cream that, you know, but also to be this community resource.
Or? Yeah, well, we just wanted a place that everybody felt welcome. You know, serve high quality, delicious stuff, and focus on local ingredients, but also be a place that anybody feels welcome in. Yeah, I think we know it.
Yeah. Well, it certainly feels that way every time I go there.
Yeah.
And then Food Truck Friday is back to that. It's happening starting – when does it start? It starts kind of
now-ish. 4 o'clock.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I got to get going. I got to go get the trailer, move it over, and
okay.
get all prepped. We're going to do something fun. We made cronuts this morning. We have a guest.
I saw that. I didn't understand what cronuts.
Well, our guest baker this week was Dave Thomas, who owns Sentinel Coffee. He's a wonderful baker. And he's figured out how to replicate the cronut, which is this French baker in New York City invented. It's croissant dough deep fried like a donut and then glazed with wonderful flavors.
Nice.
So we made those this morning and they were gone like that.
Okay.
But I'm going to try tonight Food Truck Friday's Fried Alaska. You got Baked Alaska, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to do fried Alaska. We're going to do some fried croissant dough. And make a little ice cream sandwich out of it.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. So Food Truck Friday is happening tonight. Mark Wheeler from Copa, thanks so much for coming in. Good luck.
Thank you.
To the business.
We have a little partnership with Pucker Wilson's. If you spend $10 or more with us, we give you a dollar off of Pucker's and vice versa.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Great. All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you, Danny.
Keep on trucking, man.
All right. See ya.
There. Food Truck Friday is happening, starting in just about 10 minutes or so, over at the Jack. Lots of great stuff, great music, fun activities, good stuff going on, and we're shaping into a nice weekend here. Right now, the forecast in Juneau for tonight is looking at mostly cloudy skies, a little bit of some showers, maybe early in the evening, and some late night fog, but then It's getting mostly cloudy for Saturday, patchy fog, but no call for showers, isolated some showers, maybe just in the afternoon, and that same forecast for Saturday night. Then partly cloudy skies for Sunday, which partly cloudy, you know what that means. That means sunny in Juneau. Highs around 66. Same thing happening for Monday, highs around 68, and getting to mostly cloudy Monday night through Wednesday night. And lows around 50, highs around 65 degrees for the upcoming week. Sounds like a good one coming up. Right now, here's Garrison Keillor coming up with Friday's edition of Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 19th of June, 2015. Juneteenth, also known as Freedom Day or Emancipation Day. It was on this day, 1865, Galveston, Texas, Union soldiers arrived, and General Gordon read the Emancipation Proclamation. It's the birthday of the mathematician Blaise Pascal, born in Clermont-Ferrand, France, 1623. By the time he was 19, he'd perfected the first mechanical calculator. In the field of physics, he discovered that air has weight and proved that vacuums are possible in nature. In mathematics, he founded the theory of probabilities and developed an early form of integral calculus. He also invented the syringe and the hydraulic press. But he was torn between his scientific life and his spiritual life. And when he was 23, he felt the need to withdraw from the world, devote his life to God. He returned to religion after a mystical conversion, entered an abbey in 1655, lived as a hermit, and produced his great work of religious philosophy, the Pensées. It's the birthday of Greil Marcus, born in San Francisco, 1945, author of Music Criticism and editor of A New Literary History of America. And it's the birthday of the novelist Salman Rushdie, born in Bombay, 1947, who, when he was 40, published a novel, The Satanic Verses, banned in India, burned throughout the Muslim world. The Ayatollah Khomeini announced that Rushdie should be sentenced to death for blasphemy, and Rushdie had to go into hiding until the death sentence was finally lifted in 1998. It's the anniversary of the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibited discrimination based on race, color, religion, or national origin in employment, voting, and the use of public facilities. Here's a poem for today by Mona Van Dyne, In Bed with a Book. In police procedurals, they're dying. All over town, the life ripped out of them by gun, bumper, knife, hammer, dope, etc., and no clues at all. All through the book, the calls come in, body found in bed, car, street, lake, park, garage, library, and someone goes out to look and write it down. Death begins life's whole routine to do in these stories of our fellow citizens. Nobody saw it happen, or everyone saw, but can't remember the car. What difference does it make when the child will never fall in love, the girl will never have a child, the man will never see a grandchild, the old maid will never have another cup of hot cocoa at bedtime? Like life, the dead are dead, their consciousness, as dear to them as mine to me, snuffed out. What has mind to do with this when the earth is bereaved? I lie with my dear ones, holding a fictive umbrella, while around us falls the real and acid rain. The handle grows heavier and heavier in my hand. Unlike life, tomorrow night, under the bed lamp, by a quick link of thought, someone will find out why, and the policemen and their wives and I will feel better. But all that's toward the end of the book. Meantime, tonight, without a clue, I enter sleep's little rehearsal. In bed with a book, a poem by Mona Van Dyne from Near Change, published by Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
More slack guitar there, and thanks so much to all of my guests today on Juno Afternoon, including Sarah McNeil Grove, president of the Juno Community Band. Also, Sarah Bird here talking about the Summer Solstice Boat Party. That sounds like a blast. Also, Mark Wheeler. Food Truck Friday is happening starting right now. Christina De La Rosa and the Longest Day concert. That's on Sunday, starting at 1. And also, thanks so much to Jeff Brown and his really great interview about the Hulu Workshop happening this weekend with Kuma Hulu Kilo Hano Silve. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Andy Klein, and that's Friday's Juno Afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
And just finishing up on Juno Afternoon here, Andy Klein in the studio with you. Scott Burton's here too. Scott?
Good afternoon, Andy. Thank you for having me in the studio.
Blitz is on.
It's on. We have one day left. We're going through tomorrow morning, folks. This is our 2.5-day summer spring mini drive extravaganza.
It's a joy. It's a joy to be here with you, and it's a joy to listen to all the people calling in, showing their support.
It's working.
Pledging the money and keeping us going here every single day.
Absolutely, and we're going into All Things Considered, one of the most listened to radio programs in the country. You love it, we love it. 586-3636 or go to ktoo.org.
You can do it now. You can do it as often as you want to. But people are standing by right now to take your call.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Participants at a prayer vigil in Charleston, South Carolina, have gathered to remember the 9 people shot and killed during a Bible session this week. 21-year-old Dylan Roof, the white man.